Let us not forget that we are involved in a serious social revolution where is a political party that will make it unnecessary to march on Washington. Where is the political party that will make it unnecessary to march in the streets of Birmingham? Those who have said be patient and wait, we must say that we cannot be patient. If we do not get meaningful legislation out of this Congress, we will march through the South, through the streets of Jackson, through the streets of Danville, through the streets of Cambridge, through the streets of Birmingham. But we will march with the spirit of love and with the spirit of dignity that we have shown here today. We must say, wake up, America, wake up, for we cannot stop, and we will not and cannot be patient.
John Lewis was one of the original 13 Freedom Riders. He rode buses across the South in 1961 to challenge segregation in public transportation. They were attacked. They were beaten. Their buses were firebombed. They were, and he was, undeterred. John Lewis and the Freedom Riders set the stage for the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the Voting Rights Act of 1965. What you just heard was a speech that John Lewis gave on behalf of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee at the March on Washington on August 28, 1963. He was the youngest speaker on the stage that historic Wednesday. He was just 23 years old. Congressman Lewis was elected to the House of Representatives in 1986. He was reelected 16 times, dropping below 70% of the vote in the general election just once. In 1988, a year after being sworn into Congress, Lewis introduced a bill to create a National African American History Museum, a project that could be traced all the way back to 1915. Year after year, the project was killed because of cost, or worse, as I'm sure North Carolina Senator Jesse Holmes will attest to, as he frequently stood in the way of the passing of this bill, despite bipartisan support. You remember Jesse Holmes, don't you? The racist North Carolina Republican senator who went against Harvey Gantt, the guy Michael Jordan wouldn't publicly endorse. When Holmes didn't seek re-election in 2002, the bill passed. The National Museum of African American History and Culture opened on September 26, 2016, 100 years after it was first proposed and 28 years after John Lewis introduced the bill. And that's the story of John Lewis. Not the protests, not the beatings, not the speeches. It's the perseverance. It's the fact that he survived the beatings, both physically and with his dignity. It's the fact that he marched knowing he would be beaten and arrested. And when he was let out before his bruises healed, he'd march again, be beaten again, and be arrested again. And just like the bill to build the National Museum of African American History, his determination would see him through. Kevin Morita, the editor-in-chief of The Undefeated, wrote, "He had a gentleness about him that bellied his fierceness as a fighter for justice and equality. He led a life of consistency, vigorously pursuing a better America, until he no longer could. John Lewis is gone, but we're still here. It's up to us now."
Woke up quick at about noon.
Hope you had a fantastic weekend, and welcome into the Monday, July 20th edition of the podcast with Damian Barling here on the Be Heard podcast platform. So excited that you decided to make this podcast, to make this show, and to make me part of your Monday. Plenty of NFL stuff to talk about. We are just a couple of days away from the first NBA game in 4 months. We're just a couple of days away from the first scrimmage game. It's going to look a little bit different. They're only doing 10-minute quarters. It's going to be modified to a certain degree. Players are looking to ramp up. Officials are looking to ramp up. The league in general is looking to ramp up. But we are getting live professional basketball coming up this weekend. You'll hear from Luke Walton and a couple members of the Sacramento Kings as well here in just a few minutes. I want to remind you, if you want more content here, go to patreon.com/Damian Barling. I watched a little bit of Extreme Rules last night, particularly the eye for an eye nonsense, and I kind of had the Swamp Thing match in the background. But I'm going to rewatch that today, post a wrestling edition of the podcast over there on Patreon.com. And, of course, another episode of Be Conscious coming up here in just a matter of days. Patreon.com/Damian Barling. And, of course, make sure you check out the rest of the podcast here on the Be Heard podcast platform. Deuce and Mo talk with Doug Christie today for over 60 minutes. So when you wrap up here, make sure you go check that one out, the Deuce and Mo podcast with Douglas Dale Christie. The NFL star players launched a coordinated media blitz yesterday. And Drew Brees, Russell Wilson, Todd Gurley, Jarvis Landry, this is just to name a couple. Aaron Donald was in there. Myles Garrett, who's now the highest paid defensive player in the history of the NFL. Michael Thomas, he tweeted as well, if Adam Silver can respect the voices and protect his NBA players, why can't Roger Goodell do the same? Listen to your players. That message, that was the one from Michael Thomas. That message was on brand with everything that was tweeted. Myles Garrett, if the NFL doesn't do their part to keep players healthy, there is no football in 2020. It's that simple. Hashtag we want to play. And that was kind of the theme over these tweets that came out. We want to play. It started with J.J. Watt just a couple of days ago talking about, and I think we talked about it on the podcast, talking about how the players want to be, you know, they want to play, but they want to be safe. They want to make sure that they're protected. They want to make sure that when they go home, their families and their kids, they're protected. You heard Russell Wilson, or I should say you saw Russell Wilson bring up the fact that his wife is pregnant and he's not comfortable with the terms of testing. He's not comfortable with, you know, the COVID-19 protocol for the NFL. And the NFL being, well, the NFL, the strong hand of the NFL, this all came, you know, within hours of the NFL issuing a statement that they expect all teams and all players to report to camp in 8 days. 8 days from today is the official start of NFL training camp across the NFL, across the entire league. The official start to training camp is 8 days away. Think about how many times have I used this line over the course of the last 4 months when we were, you know, trying to figure out, even, you know, going back to March and going back to April, and we were talking about, you know, I don't know that, you know, live sports is going to return. I don't know that there are going to be any live sports. And that was always my sentiment. I never believed that basketball was going to return. I never believed that baseball was going to return. And I wasn't confident that there was going to be NFL football games. But the one constant we had was, well, if you're the NFL, you just kind of get to sit back and absorb all this. If you're the NFL, you get to see what the NBA is doing. You get to see what MLS is doing. You get to see what Major League Baseball is doing. You get to see all of that stuff. You get to absorb it. You get to see what's working. You get to see what's not working. And then you could formulate your plan. You're the most profitable sports league in the country. Like, you've got time. This is dating back to March. This is dating back to April, dating back to May. It appears they have just been sitting on their hands going, wait a minute, we're the NFL. We're going to tell our players what to do. We're going to tell them to start camp on time. And most of our teams are going to figure out a way to get fans into the stadium. We heard about the Patriots. We'll get to the Raiders story. We'll get to the fans here in just a minute. I know we talked about the Ravens about a week ago, talking about there'll be capacity to out of 10% capacity, 20% capacity. We'll be able to get about 10,000 fans in there. It's like, Jesus Christ, you guys haven't even figured out how to take care of your players yet. You're already talking about how to let fans into the game or fans into the arena. It's the strong hand of the NFL. That's what this is. And now, I was going to say, now we're going to get ready to see another fight. But I wonder, like, this is the same thing that happened with the collective bargaining agreement, if you remember. This is why the NFL's Players Association, this is why the NFL's union is the weakest in all of sports. Because you have, like, what do these names have in common? Russell Wilson, Drew Brees, Myles Garrett, Aaron Donald, Michael Thomas, Todd Gurley, Jarvis Landry, what do all of those guys have in common? Those are all tier one and tier two players. Hell, they're all really tier one players. Jarvis Landry may be the exception. Jarvis Landry's a hell of a ball player, though, but he's good enough to get guaranteed money. And so now we're boiling down. Stop me if this sounds familiar. In fact, don't stop me because it is going to sound familiar. The haves and the have-nots. That's what we're talking about here. You didn't see, you know, backup offensive tackle two, who is going to make a roster, and he'll continue to make rosters in the NFL, but he's going to make, you know, at the lower end of the salary, he's going to have to get a certain amount of snaps before he's guaranteed a certain dollar figure. He's got no chance for Pro Bowls and All Pros and different things like that, but he does make a living playing football. Where is that guy? Now, you could argue, well, him tweeting doesn't have any impact. You're right. Him tweeting might not have any impact. However, he's the guy that's going to vote against the Russell Wilson, Drew Brees, Todd Gurley, Myles Garrett camp. There are more of them than there are of the group of players that tweeted this weekend. There are more players who, they're the guys screaming, hey, we've got to get back to work. That's essentially what we're talking about here. We're talking about businesses that can afford to be out of work and businesses that cannot afford to be out of work. That's Russell Wilson can afford to be out of work. He can afford not to go back. He can afford to lose the whole 2020 season, as can Drew Brees, as can Myles Garrett, as can Aaron Donald, as can every player that I've already named multiple times here in the early part of this podcast. But there are significantly more players that cannot afford to be out of work in 2020. And that's you know, football is a microcosm of society. Football, the Football Players Union is a microcosm of what's going on in the entire country. Those that can afford to be out of business and those that can afford to or can't afford to be out of business. It's the small businesses versus the big corporations. Big corporations are going to find a way to get through. The small businesses are going to starve. Does Russell Wilson have the interest of the small business in his mind when he's tweeting or when he's negotiating? They had an executive call, and this was coordinated. This wasn't like one person saw what Russell Wilson did, and then it was like a domino effect. I think it was Byron Jones, the Dolphins cornerback. Dan Graziano, I think, wrote that of ESPN. That he kind of came up with the idea of having essentially a social media blitz, getting out the message of how players feel, not just about training camp, but about the NFL season and how their primary concern is making sure that all NFL players are safe. So this was coordinated, but they had it was coordinated by Byron Jones during a conference call that they had. Stop me if this sounds familiar as well. It was 50 50 of the highest profile players in the NFL. Sounds a lot like what the NBA did, right? The big superstar call with LeBron and AD and Russ and James Harden and all those guys. Very similar. Highest profile players. They wanted, you know, they wanted to talk. This was the NFLPA's executive committee. Like they wanted to talk, kind of hammering things out, get the stars' opinions on it. Well, my question to the stars, my question to Myles Garrett, and I'm not arguing in no way, shape, or form are any of these guys who tweeted wrong. You shouldn't have to publicly beg your company to keep you safe. I couldn't think of a better word than beg. These guys obviously aren't on their hands and knees begging to for their company to keep them safe. But what they're saying is, you need to protect us. You need to protect our families. You need to keep us healthy. You need to keep our teams healthy. You need to put us in the best position to succeed through this virus. That's what they're telling the NFL. That's what those players are telling the NFL. And you shouldn't have to do that. That should be a no-brainer. It should be the business's intent. Well, our first order of business is, obviously, we got to keep our fans safe. Well, that's easy. We're not going to let fans into the arena. Boom. End of story. Okay, we've got to keep our players safe. Oh, wait a minute. How do we truly keep our players safe in a contact sport with a virus that is transmitted through contact? I don't know. But are we preparing for an unsafe work environment type suit here? And I'm not trying to be funny. I'm being dead serious. Like, is that what we're talking about? Is that what ultimately comes about of this? The Players Association has been steadfast in what they want in all of this. And tell me if any of this is outrageous, because you know I'm always a players guy first. Always. 10 times out of 10, I'm a players guy. But I can recognize when the league is going to want certain things, and maybe things should go that way. Maybe if the demands of the players are a little over the top, I have no problem pointing that out. But tell me if any of this that I'm about to read to you is over the top. Daily testing. No preseason games. And basically a ramp-up period once they report to camp, meaning day one, you know, they're not in pads, you know, hitting each other. You know, they're not going through full-fledged contact practices. What they want is 21 days of strength and conditioning, 10 days of non-padded practice, and 14 days of, you know, getting comfortable with contact, you know, getting those contact practices in. That's how they want camp laid out. Is any of that, daily testing, no preseason games, and a ramp-up period, is any of that over the top? Is any of that, like, too demanding? How could, if you're the NFL, not want to test daily? And I know that the NFL is about lining their pockets, and I'm going to say this until I'm dead. This isn't about the NFL losing money. This is about the NFL not making as much money. Every single one of these owners, from the board that owns the, from the public that owns the Green Bay Packers, to Mark Davis, to the 30-some-odd billionaires that are in the league that own these teams, they're all greedy, and they're all looking to figure out how they can make as much money as possible in a year where there's almost no way they're going to make as much money as they did last year or the year before, or there's no way they're going to make as much money in any year that they have been an NFL owner. That's all that this boils down to. No one is going to lose their wealth. No one is going to lose their team. No one is going to lose their franchise. No city is in trouble of losing a team. Nothing of that sort. There is no extreme situation with any of the 32 NFL teams. Not one. Simply because if you keep your players safe, if you, you know, eliminate these useless preseason games, if you create a ramp up so these guys can get comfortable and get back in the flow again of training, and then of course, you know, doing football drills and then obviously hitting and being in pads and doing that whole deal, you have the ability to earn billions and billions of dollars through your television contracts. You have your partnership with DirecTV still in full effect. Doesn't matter that there aren't fans in the stands. You present games, you fulfilled your contract to DirecTV. You present games, you fulfill your billion-dollar contract to Fox. You present games, you fulfill your billion-dollar contract to both NBC and ABC or Disney or ESPN or however you want to phrase that Monday Night Football contract. The money still comes rolling in. You make the decision to eliminate fans completely. And again, we'll get to those stories here in just a minute. But you make the decision to eliminate fans completely. Again, this is not a matter of losing money. It is a matter of not making as much. And hey, it sucks when you don't make as much money as you did the year before. Most of us don't have the luxury of billions of dollars in our bank account to fall back on. Every single one of these owners does. Every single one of them. You know who doesn't? The players that weren't tweeting about the NFL this weekend. The special teams players, they don't have the luxury to not have a 2020 season. The guys who are entering non-guaranteed years of their deals, they don't have the luxury of not playing. It's up to those star players and the NFL owners to make sure that a large percentage, I mean, is it outrageous to say 90%? Maybe that's too extreme. Maybe 85% of the league needs to play this year. Because that you got to remember how big an NFL roster is. We're talking 50-plus guys here on the final roster. We're talking 50-plus guys on the final roster, not talking about a practice squad. How many of those players on each team do you think make big guaranteed money? How many of those players on each team, 32 teams, 55-plus players, can look at this and go, eh, if we don't play this year, it's not a big deal? Or how many of them look at this and go, if we don't play this year, I've got to go find a job. Not only do I got to go find a job, I got to find a pretty decent paying job. I got to go find a six-figure job where I could get some work done, or at least close to a six-figure job. Imagine that. Imagine like you get shut out of doing your work and you've got to go find a job that pays you $100,000 to take care of your family. At least at minimum $100,000 to take care of your family. All because the players or the owners didn't want to lose as much money. And that's what this boils down to. Remember how narrow, way back in March, right before the pandemic hit, is when this that's how this collective bargaining agreement gets forgotten so easily. It passed the same exact week the world shut down. It passed so narrowly. It couldn't have been by any slimmer of a margin. And this is why. The haves and the have-nots. It's the same exact thing here, though the voting for this process is a little bit different. And the threat or potential threat of a unsafe working conditions suit, well, maybe that'll get the owner's attention. Because I could absolutely be wrong, and I don't pretend to be a law student, but I would think an unsafe working conditions suit would cost the NFL significantly more than eliminating fans from games, eliminating preseason games, and doing COVID testing every day. Of course, that's just a guess. I could be completely wrong on that. But I'm starting to think unsafe working conditions. What we just said it, what, 55 plus players on a roster, counting the practice team, go up to 70 players on a roster, 80 players on a roster times 32 rosters. Now you're talking about billionaires losing money. Real money this time. Nothing else. And then you eliminate a season, now you've lost money. Because if you're ESPN and you're paying all of this money, or your ABC, NBC, your CBS, your DirecTV, you're paying all of this money for exclusive rights to the NFL and you're not getting that NFL, what do you do? TNT and the NBA are partners. They made it work. ESPN wants to continue to, you know, be the second home of the NBA. So they're going to keep that partnership firm, and they continue to work together all throughout the year, and they presented different NBA games, different NBA-related programming. There was no contentious shutdown with the National Basketball Association. But I don't imagine that players are going to be, you know, anxious to, you know, to play a masked up flag football game to fulfill some TV contracts, you know, like they did the horse tournament for ESPN. No, the players are going to be pissed. The league is going to be pissed. Therefore, the networks are going to be pissed. And now we're talking about owners losing money. But the owners have to feel a real threat of losing money before any of this matters. Because right now, I got to imagine every single owner looks at this the same way I do. Oh, it's cute. It's cute, Patrick Mahomes and J.J. White. Oh, look at all of these guys. They're aligned. Miles Garrett, look at that. Look at Russell Wilson tweeting. That's cute. Even Drew Brees got in on the act. You know, he wants to make good with some of the players. This is adorable. But in the end, we know what we know. And that's that there are far more have-nots than there are haves. And we just named a whole bunch of the haves. And they're never going to be able to get those have-nots on board. And that's where the NFL Players Association has always failed to pull the punt card of the NFL. That's where the NFL Players Association has always been unable to get just a small percentage of those have-nots and get them on their side and say, hey, we're looking out for the best interest of the league today. We're looking out for the best interest of the league moving forward. And this is certainly a unique environment. It's a unique negotiation, and it shouldn't be left up to star players to have to publicly state, keep us safe. None of these demands are outrageous. Absolutely not one of them. So we'll keep an eye on it. Eight days away from what is supposed to be the start of training camp. Yeah, this is going to be something. This is going to be absolutely something to watch. I mentioned stadiums. I mentioned capacities. Mark Davis, I actually like this. I'm going to give Mark Davis credit for this because this is a smart way, in my opinion, to get your fans on your side. He said, as it relates to the first season in Las Vegas, he says, if fans can attend home games in person, I won't attend. He said, I won't go if the fans can't go. And the way it looks right now, there won't be any fans at our games. He went on to say he's not going to, he doesn't want to do a deal where partial fans are let in. If you recall, I think I noted this, and if I didn't, forgive me. Remember how we were talking about the tarps being put over the first eight rows that teams are going to be able to sell advertising to? So the first eight rows all around the stadium, there's going to be tarps, and you could sell them, right? You could Vibe Health Bar right there on the, you know, the Be Heard podcast platform. You could put it right there on the tarp. Maybe we can invest in it, find out how much it costs. We could all pull our money and buy some advertising here during the Raiders game in Las Vegas. Well, that initiative or that idea, you know, passed amongst NFL owners 30-1 or 31-1. The one was, it was Mark Davis. Mark Davis didn't want to do that because he says, we've already sold those season tickets. We're completely sold out. What are we going to do with those people? We don't have anywhere. He said it was 8,000 seats. We don't have anywhere to put those 8,000 people. So how can I agree to that? And again, I get it. I get what he's saying. I'm not sure that he understands exactly what we're dealing with here in terms of this global pandemic and the necessity for adjustment. But I also understand, like, what do I do with these 8,000 people who have purchased these seats in the first eight rows? These are our highest paying ticket holders, by the way, especially once you get to the 250-yard lines and anywhere in the vicinity of them. Those first eight rows, that's big money. And in Las Vegas, too? Yeah, that's big money. But Mark Davis said, if everyone can't come, no one can come. Because how am I going to tell someone, I know you bought a season ticket, unfortunately, you can't go because of the social distancing thing, but this other person can go. So Mark Davis says it's all or none. And, you know, Mark Davis is a smart guy. He knows that none of this is really up to him. It's going to be up to the league. More specifically, it's going to be up to state governments. And we all know that state governments will roll over for the NFL. We saw that months ago. We saw that when Gavin Newsom and Governor Abbott in Texas, New York, we all on the same day. Oh, we're gonna get fans into games. We think we could do it. This was 4 months ago. What a shit show that looks like today. Meanwhile, Arizona and Florida are already up and running. How does that look? America is literally the stupidest country on the planet. Like not only are we run by idiots, we all conduct ourselves as a bunch of idiots. Collectively, this country is fucking stupid. And the sooner we all acknowledge that, the better. Like, look at what we're talking about right now. We're talking about fans being let in. I read an article, and I just refute, this just cannot be true. The first event at the stadium in Las Vegas is a Garth Brooks concert. 65,000 people. Sold out. Garth Brooks concert. It is scheduled to go on right now. It's 1 month from today. It's August 22nd. There have not been a single change to that concert presenting itself. There's no way this is happening, right? Like, and I want to believe the we're all smart enough. I want to believe that the governor of Nevada has already shown. Maybe not so much. Or the mayor of Las Vegas has already shown, yeah, maybe not the sharpest tool in the shed there. But you can't possibly, you just can't possibly put 65,000 people into a stadium for a freaking Garth Brooks concert. Like, Garth Brooks himself has to go, no, of course not. Of course we're not doing that. That's crazy. But as of this weekend, as of I think it was Saturday when I first came across the article, no amendments have been made to the concert. Right now, 65,000 people, it is completely sold out. The concert is happening as of today, as of 6:24 a.m. when the show is being recorded on July 20th. The Patriots announced that they'll have a 20% capacity for their home games at Gillette Stadium. If permitted, as we laid out a moment ago, if permitted by state and local authorities, they're going to have 20% capacity at their games. All right. Well, guess what happened once they announced that? The available tickets on the open market skyrocketed. They skyrocketed. Not only did they skyrocket, but the tickets disappeared. People bought them up. The average price of tickets for a Patriots game went up $170 They're just shy of $600 per game now because of this announcement. 20% capacity at Gillette Stadium. Massachusetts has actually done really well with the pandemic. They, if you recall, the Northeast, when you looked at states that were in really, really bad shape, when you looked at areas that were in really, really bad shape, New York was obviously, you know, for all of the reasons imaginable, they were at the top. Rhode Island was really close. Boston was really close. All of those areas in that Northeast region were some of the worst, some of the highest infected, I guess is the proper way to say it. But Massachusetts has done, they've done pretty well. I don't know if it's well enough to fill Gillette Stadium up to 20% capacity, but, you know, each team is going to operate on their own. And this is going to be like, what is this going to do? Is this going to get NFL owners to turn on each other? Like, if Bobby Kraft can let 20% of his stadium fill up, but Mark Davis can't. Or, you know, Bobby Kraft and I'm sure there's a number of other states that I'm not thinking of that can, you know, fill up their stadium to 10, 15, 20% capacity, 25% capacity. But Gavin Newsom won't allow the San Francisco 49ers to do it, or the Los Angeles Chargers or the Los Angeles Rams. Does that get some infighting amongst the owners? Like, what does that mean? And that's a genuine question. Like, does everybody just sit back and go, okay, is there revenue sharing here? Or is that just all Bobby Kraft's money? Like, hey, our state is less dumb than yours. We've managed this better. And so here we are. I'm old enough to remember when Sacramento was one of the best in terms of like metropolitan areas. We had one of the lowest COVID testing results in the entire country. Like, we were the, I'm old enough to remember when California was like the model child. We were the poster child for how well things have gone with COVID-19. And now we're a poster child of a far different variety. Ed Orgeron always makes for a good poster, always makes for a good soundbite. And he says, quote, my gut feeling is we're going to play. I'm sure he said it with a significantly more raspy voice, but that's what he said. He says, my gut feeling is we're going to play football, whether we start September 5th or a little after that, in conference, out of conference, that doesn't bother me. I do know this. I believe we're going to play. I'm almost certain we're going to play. Good for Ed Orgeron. I wouldn't expect anything else from Ed Orgeron. I would be more concerned if Ed Orgeron said we weren't going to play. Because if Ed Orgeron said, yeah, I'm not sure we're going to play football this year, I would be 100% positive football wasn't going to happen. Because that's just not Ed Orgeron's DNA. And his confidence kind of flies in the face of everything else that's happening in the NCAA. But it's what you would expect from Ed Orgeron. I don't put any stock in it. But I'd expect the Power 5 conferences to make their decisions. We talked about that last week, right? We talked about that when the Ivy League shut down. And I expect other small conferences to shut down one after the other after the other. And it's going to boil down to the Power 5 conferences. And I do believe that the Power 5 conferences can operate separate from the NCAA. The NCAA can come out with whatever ruling they want. They can come out with whatever they want to say. But those Power 5 conferences make so much money. I think the NCAA, what was his name, Mark Emmert, I think he's already succeeded. He's already said, oh, you guys go, we're going to let these conferences make their decisions. Oh, okay. So you, smart thing to say with the Ivy League, because NCAA doesn't care if the Ivy League plays or not. And there's a number of conferences, a whole bunch of conferences. And the NCAA doesn't care whether they play or not. But there are five conferences in which they very much care. There are five conferences that carry the water for the entire NCAA. Whether it's their networks, whether it's their agreements with major broadcast networks, there are only five conferences that matter. And obviously, Ed Orgeron is in one of them. And if there's no football to be played this year, Ed Orgeron gets to be the champion for another year. That's how it works, right? You just carry it over right in to the next year. I want to remind you, as we're rolling along here, head over to thedopeones.com. That promo code is still available for you. It's only available for a couple more days. As a matter of fact, I think today is the last day. I think today is the last day that this promo code is available, 720, SEVN20720, to get 20% off of your order. You could purchase your More Than a Podcast t-shirt. You could purchase your Be Heard t-shirt, and you can go check out some of the incredible gear that Donnie Ramsey has over there on thedopeones.com. no matter what your flavor is, you'll find something dope there, man. He is an incredible designer. He is an incredible apparel designer, graphic designer. I'm so happy that we have partnered with him, and he's a great podcaster as well. You can check out the Dope Ones podcast here on the Be Heard podcast platform. As we roll along here, I want to get to a conversation that I had over the weekend over on the Sacramento Kings podcast with Sanjay Singh. He's a writer for the Kings Herald. Very talented young man. I'm happy him and I got to connect, and I'll lay out some of the conversation we had. Again, this is a very small portion of a very lengthy conversation we had, but the Kings, you know, they got back at it this weekend. You heard John Lewis to start today's show. Luke Walton opened up his press conference by talking about the great civil rights leader.
Yeah, I think it's important that before we get into basketball, we acknowledge the life of a great man that we lost today in John Lewis. And we talked to the team about it. And it's important, I think, that we not only share our love and our thoughts and our prayers, but we give thanks. We give thanks to a man that lived an incredible life, that sacrificed so much to try to make the world a better place. And the more you read on him and hear about some of the things he did, it's just absolutely incredible. And he truly did spend his life trying to make life better for others. And I just want to take a second to recognize that and give thanks for everything that he did.
Luke Walton there opening up his press conference. I guess that's what you call them, press conferences, media availability, by talking about the great civil rights leader, John Lewis. Let's move along to Basketball Matters. Yogi Ferrell, he got in front of the media, I think, for the first time. And in case you've forgotten, and I realize it's been a long time, hashtag I'm a Yogi guy. Jason Jones asked him a question about what it's going to be like to finally get out there against somebody else this Wednesday when they take on the Miami Heat.
We can look forward to busting somebody else's ass. I mean, for sure. We've been going at each other's necks for about almost 2 weeks now. So I think it'll be really fun for us to go out there and just show what we've been working on, show some things that we need to dust off. So I think the scrimmages will really, really help us going into this 8-game stretch trying to make the playoffs. I feel like we're one of the teams that's built for this, going into playing these games in front of no fans. I think that's just going to give guys, I feel like, a lot more confidence, honestly, just to go out there, shoot it with confidence, attack the rim, not have to worry about all the extra stuff. It's really just our Sacramento team here right now in Orlando, and I feel like we can make that push.
Couple of things worth noting here as we talk about the Sacramento Kings. Alex Len has arrived in Orlando. He hasn't been able to rejoin the team yet for practice, but he is there. He is going through the protocol to be able to join the team and be involved in practices. The clock on Rashawn Holmes being grounded is still ticking. And Harrison Barnes, he has not arrived to Orlando yet. He is still in Sacramento. Luke Walton, I think after his John Lewis tribute there, as the press conference got underway, he joked, we need some good energy. I'm not going to shave until Harrison Barnes joins us. Of course, that's playing off of Harrison Barnes not shaving until the Kings made the playoffs, or whatever that line was that he uttered so long ago. But Harrison Barnes is not with Sacramento, and I want to bring in and play a portion of the conversation I had with Sanjay Singh over on the Sacramento Kings podcast presented by HoopBall and the HoopBall Podcast Network. This was a long conversation, so if you want to hear the entire, you know, 40-45 minute portion of the conversation, head over and search HoopBall in your podcast platform. Look for the Sacramento Kings podcast. Hit the subscribe button right there, and that is our exclusive, that is our all Sacramento Kings content podcast right there for you. But we started our conversation by talking about Harrison Barnes, and if Harrison Barnes isn't around come the start of the season in just about 11 days, who would you start in his place?
I think what Walton is doing is Bazemore, and I kind of agree with that because I would much rather prefer Bazemore be your energy guy off the bench. But with the current situation, you kind of do need Bazemore to come into the starting role and be the be the veteran guy that Barnes provides to the starting lineup. You know, keep everybody in check, make sure they're not making mistakes, provide offense. You know, he shoots a very high 38% from three, I believe it is. And he's also very versatile in defense. He doesn't have the same length that Barnes does, but he still brings the same intensity. And he's not going to, you know, replicate Barnes' production as a starter, but you definitely need him in the lineup right now compared to what other options they have.
I think, again, because it feels like an eternity ago and we've sort of lost concept of time over the course of the last several months, Kent Bazemore was playing really, really well as a Sacramento King.
Yeah, really, really good. I was very impressed with him because his numbers have been very, like, fluctuating the last few seasons. He's trying to find his form, and he found it in Sacramento ever since the trade for Trevor Ariza. And it's been a pleasant surprise, and I really love watching the way he plays. I never thought that, you know, Bazemore would probably be one of my favorite players to watch this season for the Kings, but here we are, you know?
It's been a strange year, bro. a strange year when you can give the nod to, yep, Kent Bazemore has turned into one of my favorite Sacramento Kings. Okay, so let's play with the and I know this is, you know, kind of fun scenarios that we just throw around as Kings fans and the whole deal, but the more likely scenario in my mind is that De'Aaron isn't available at least for the very beginning. And if he isn't available, or if he is available, he's not going to be, I don't think he's going to be close to 100%. So let's play a scenario where it's De'Aaron Fox who's out rather than Harrison Barnes. Who do you start in his position?
I think I go with Corey Joseph. And I know that's what the Kings did earlier when, you know, Fox sprained the same left ankle in November. And what they did was they replaced him with Corey Joseph, slowed down the pace. So I think you might have to give that a try because it did work early on. They did beat some really good teams. They did also lose to some very strange teams, but it worked. And if they can try to replicate that success and play to people's strengths without relying on pace right now, then that could be something to, you know, hold on to while De'Aaron Fox is still resting up.
What do you think happens with Bagley in Orlando? I know that's one of the before we found out Harrison Barnes wasn't there, before De'Aaron's ankle got him, before Rashawn Holmes crossed the gun line, the big conversation was, well, what's Marvin Bagley's role going to be?
I think we're probably going to see Bagley playing hefty minutes, maybe in the upwards of, or maybe like 20 to 25 would be something I wouldn't be surprised to see. He's probably going to definitely get time at center because he said, you know, he got up 10 pounds and he's, you know, looking forward to playing that position. And that's what I want to see out of him. I want to see if he can show that he can play center, hang with the bigger guys, the bigger defensive guys, show he can help protect the rim, show he can stretch the floor in offense. I know he's been working on the three ball a lot because this season it's been disappointing for him. And as an 18% shooter this season, it's definitely a number you can, you know, improve with work. And I know he hasn't played in over 4 months, but this is Marvin Bagley's chance to shine in what has been a very bummer season for him. And so I think he brings it.
I feel like, did they not win a game with Marvin Bagley in the lineup, or was it like some awful record where they were like 1-13 or 14, or it was just some awful record with Marvin Bagley in the lineup?
I may be wrong, but I vaguely remember the winning number being zero.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I thought it was.
It just wasn't good, but there's a lot of other factors that play into it, but it just wasn't good.
I'm looking, you posted this. I saw you post this the other day. It made me laugh. So I'll ask you the question that Google asked you. Is Harrison Barnes good?
I was laughing so hard when I saw that. And, you know, good is capitalized too. Is Harrison Barnes good? But
is he good or is he good?
I really want to know. Is he good or is he good? Yeah. And he is good. But I feel like it does go under the radar because of the price tag he is under. You know, 4 years, $88 million. People want you to, you know, be putting up 20 points a game, be putting up 7 rebounds, put up 8 assists to go along with that. But Barnes isn't necessarily asked to put up big numbers. He's just more of an elite complementary role player to the guys that Kings want to be stars. And he's done a good job of that. So my answer to that would be, yeah, Harrison Barnes is good, and he needs to be in Orlando for the Kings to have a chance to.
Yeah, you're not going to get I don't think you're going to get an argument from – you're not certainly not going to get an argument from me. I don't think you're going to get an argument with any Kings fan about whether he needs to be in Orlando for the Kings to have a chance. But I think Harrison is one of those guys who's – they're like a victim of their contracts. You instead of just looking at him as a player and what he brings to the different lineups that he's in, you look at what he's getting paid. And then you look at players who are getting paid something similar and you go, well, Harrison Barnes isn't that good. And we do that all the time. We do that in football. But it's a really prevalent conversation in basketball where money is a little bit more free-flowing than it is in other sports. And Harrison is always one of those guys who, I feel like he's always been good. Like, he was never a bad player, but because of the amount of money that he's been paid throughout his career, it becomes one of those, ugh, he's not even good.
Yeah, and it's weird because, you know, in Dallas, they asked him to do a lot of isolation plays, score as a creator, but that just didn't play to his strength. And his numbers, you know, when they initially traded for him, or when the Kings initially traded for him back last year with Justin Jackson and Zach Randolph. But when you look back at that deal, the Kings, you know, definitely hit a home run on that one, because one of the things the Kings have struggled on in recent years is acquiring a high-level small forward. Ever since Rudy Gay left, the Kings have been very thin at that position. And when you get a guy like Barnes to produce the way he has and play the role he has, you really can't go wrong with that. And he only gave up Justin Jackson essentially for him because Zach Randolph doesn't even play anymore.
And he's such a great glue guy. Like, we talked about that a few minutes ago. He does such a great job both on the offensive end and the defensive end of kind of holding, you know, whatever the game plan that the coach, he's like a coach on the court, one, but he holds everything together on both sides of the floor. He seems like a guy you'd die to have on your team.
Exactly. Yeah. Every team needs a guy like Harrison Barnes. As much as people don't really see that, the more you dive into the game, the more you see how important Harrison Barnes is, because he's just really good. And man, it's a reality I don't want to see if the Kings have to play without him in Orlando.
Yeah, that's not something any of us want to see. Of course, his health is what matters the most in all of this. Eight seasons, Saunders, eight seasons for Harrison Barnes. The most money that he has made is this year, $24.1 million. What do you think Harrison Barnes' career earnings are? Eight seasons, highest year was this year, $24 million.
Is it his career earnings?
Earnings to date?
Is it between the 40s and 50s?
Oh, 40 to 50? No, it is way higher.
80?
$106.8 million. He has made north of $20 million ever since 2016-17. With the Dallas Mavericks. And by the time his current contract is over, he will have netted he will have earned $167.6 million through his contract in the NBA. That's why people hate on him right there. I'm telling you, that's the exact reason. If Harrison Barnes made $12 million, it would never be a conversation as to how good Harrison Barnes is. But because he makes $22, $23, $24 million, suddenly it's a big conversation of how good he is.
That is...
what? 106.8. Career earnings, career salary is one of my favorite games to play because it's always, no matter what you think, it always comes out to some shocking number because you don't do it with people... You don't do career earnings with Kobe Bryant. Like, you know, it's some astronomical figure and you don't think about it. But when you throw a career earnings game for like a Harrison Barnes, it gets fun because, yeah, dude's made some money. He's signed some pretty good contracts. Dallas believed in him. And, you know, I don't know what caused them to bail on him. They decided to go in a different direction. We obviously knew what was going on in Golden State, so not really a big deal there. But I'm glad that the Kings believe in him. I think he's going to work for the Kings. I think he's an important, you know, piece for the Kings. It would be nice for the Kings to have a guy with some tenure. You know what I mean? Like a player. Like, oh, this player's been around for 8 years. There aren't any players on the roster that have been around for more than a handful of years. Harrison Barnes would be the perfect guy for that. I would love to see Harrison Barnes see the end of this contract and just be the guy that De'Aaron grows around and Bagley and like teach, you know, he's one of those guys. I think he's a leader on the floor and he's a leader in the locker room.
Exactly. And one of the funny things about Harrison Barnes' age is that he's the same age as Buddy Hield and Bogdan Bogdanovic, two players that haven't been in the league as long as him, but they're all 27 years old.
You know, as much as the Ringer likes to troll Sacramento Kings fans, I think really what we're talking about, the three teams that the eighth spot should boil down to, is Memphis, New Orleans, and Sacramento. I don't feel like Portland wants to be there. I mean, Dame Lillard spoke out against this on multiple occasions. So did CJ McCollum before, you know, the protocol was announced. Now, obviously, you know, they went through it. Who knows, you know, what the PR ramifications would have been if they didn't. And I know Dame Lillard has a tremendous love for Terry Stotts. He has a tremendous love for Portland. But I don't feel like those guys are all in on this. I feel like the Pelicans are. The Pelicans would love that high-profile matchup against the Los Angeles Lakers in the first round of the playoffs. They know the storylines that'll be there. They'll know they'll get the marquee games. And Kings, obviously, as we outlined a few minutes ago, they're fighting history here at this point and, you know, trying to put an end to this drought. But and then there's, oh, by the way, Memphis, the team that has the best 65-game sample size of the other three, and so much was made about who had the easiest schedule before the pandemic and who had the most difficult schedule before the pandemic. But Memphis had put together the most consistent amount of basketball, and to the best of my knowledge, that team hasn't changed. All their studs are still there. So for me, it's Grizzlies, it's Pelicans, and it's the Kings fighting for that ninth and eighth spot in that potential play-in matchup there at the end of the eight games.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think the Portland Trail Blazers could be an interesting team to keep a lookout for, because I know they were like the one team that voted for like not returning or something like that. But when they're fully healthy, they are a playoff team. And I know that the Grizzlies do have, you know, that 3.5 game advantage, I believe it is. So that gives them a really good cushion. And every to make a single mistake, because if the Grizzlies are winning and then one of these three teams loses the game, then you're not really like, you know, everything changes for you because now you have to fight even harder. And I think the Grizzlies probably do hold on to the eighth seed. It's just a matter of who can challenge them as a ninth seed for the play-in games. But I think you should keep a lookout for Portland, because when they're fully healthy, they're probably the most ideal matchup to the Lakers with Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum. If they'll have, you know, Jokic back and healthy, Zach Collins back and healthy, that's going to be an interesting team. They're kind of weak at small forward position, but you can never count out Damian Lillard.
Oh,
that guy is
for sure. I mean, my hierarchy of NBA guys is Russell Westbrook, Kemba Walker, and Dame Lillard. I mean, those are my three favorite players in the league, and I don't want to count Portland out. I didn't mean to come across like that. Let me rephrase it. I question whether they're engaged in this process. You mentioned them voting, you know, no for the return. The way it was framed is that they voted no because they thought there were better options out there than the one that we're getting now. I have no idea what those options were, but Dame Lillard was clear. He said, I'm not going to come back unless we have a legitimate chance to compete for the playoffs. There would be no, there's no point in coming back. And so I don't know. I waited all year for Portland to make that run. And there was a stretch where Dame was averaging like 48 points a game or something absolutely absurd over a short stretch, but they weren't winning. Like, it never clicked for them. I kept waiting for that team to make the run, similar to San Antonio. I kept waiting for San Antonio to make the run. It never came for either of them. For San Antonio, it's not coming, and they've all but made that perfectly clear by who is and who isn't going to Orlando. I'm waiting for Popovich to opt out. I'm waiting for the alert that comes in when Woj, hashtag free Woj, is in effect and he gets off his suspension. I feel like his first tweet's going to be, yeah, Pop said the hell with this. I'm out. And he's going to let, you know, Becky Hammon or Tim Duncan coach or something. Like, I don't know. And lost in all of this, I don't think they have a real shot to make the playoffs. But Monty Williams, he wants to get those young guys playing. I don't think Monty Williams is looking at, of course, I don't believe he'll say this publicly either. I don't think he's looking at competing for, you know, the ninth spot in play-ins, despite the fact that they're not that much further out of it than the other teams. But he's looking to get his team like, hey, we need to carry some momentum into next season, because next season isn't that far away. Let's get some games under our belt. Let's get together. Let's play. Let's show these guys what the Phoenix Suns are going to be next year. We'll add our draft pick. We'll get some more time together. That's the type of coach I think that Monty Williams is, and I think he's going to be able to get a lot out of his players. I don't know what it's going to amount to, but if you talk about a team potentially playing spoiler in all of this, it may very well be the Phoenix Suns.
And when you started off this season, you know, the Suns came out strong too with a backcourt of Devin Booker and Ricky Rubio that were surprisingly, you know, very good together. And they eventually lost their magic and they started, you know, tumbling downwards. But now this is another team that we have to look out for because they've also benefited from the 4 months of rest just as everybody else. And if they can recover the form that they had in the beginning of the season when everybody was healthy, it's going to be fun because I don't think the Suns have a legit shot, but teams like this, like teams like the Suns and the Spurs could ideally play the spoiler for the teams that are trying to make that spot, AKA the Grizzlies and the Pelicans and the Kings. But yeah, the Suns are definitely going to be one to keep an eye on. You know, Aaron Baines is another guy that has really improved his game this season. And these guys are going to want to take down some of these people, like, you know, trying to compete for the eighth seed. Maybe the Kings are somebody that, I mean, not the Kings, the Spurs on opening day against the Kings, they can play spoiler because the Spurs have a lot of young guys. A lot of young guys that want to develop, you know, guys like Lonnie Walker. And if they can snatch away, you know, the Kings' chances right away by beating them on opening day, then that's going to be a good confidence builder for Popovich's guys. So it's all things to keep an eye out for right now. Everything is open field.
Final thoughts, man, before we let you go. So happy that you joined us, Sanji. This was a great conversation. Any thoughts on Harry Giles?
The one thing I want to see with Harry Giles, it kind of falls on De'Aaron Fox being healthy or not. But if Fox is not there, and Walton has to dumb down the offense a little bit and not rely on pace, you go into half-court sets. And one of the things that stands out about Harry Giles is that in the half-court, he opens up the game with his ability to pass in the high post. And his ability to split defenders, to find cutters heading to the basket, to read defenses is very underrated. And he needs the minutes and, you know, just the on-court time and the chemistry to develop with players to show that he can be a king in the long run. But tough because the Kings didn't, you know, accept or pick up his option. So that's, you know, a factor out of his control. But if Giles can show in whatever 10 to 15 minutes a game that he can play, then he's going to be another person to look out for because he brings a different vibe to this offense that is fresh.
Sanjay Singh, Kings Herald, we appreciate you, man. Thanks for joining us today. This was fun.
Thanks for having me, man.
Sanjay Singh, one of the very talented writers from thekingsherald.com. Make sure you go check out his work there and give him a follow at thesanjaysingh over there on Twitter. And while you're at it, give us a follow on the Be Heard platform, both on Twitter and Instagram. You can see what we got going on over there. And make sure you flip it over to the Deuce and Mo podcast as we wrap up things here. They've got Doug Christie on their show. I'm sure that's going to be a fantastic conversation, so you can check that out, as well as the rest of our podcast over on the Be Heard platform, including the Dope Ones, where I mentioned over at thedopeones.com, use the promo code 720. You'll get 20% off of your entire order, and that includes the More Than a Podcast t-shirt as well as the Be Heard t-shirts. Check out the J Street Vibes with Jason Jones and Kenny Caraway as well, and make sure you check us out tomorrow on the podcast with Damian Barling.